I call this Conference Committee on Senate File 2298 to order. Welcome, members. Since we took public testimony on the 5th, we will not be accepting additional testimony today. Members, you will find letters submitted by stakeholders included in your packets. These letters have also been posted on the House website for public review. Today, we're going to be working to adopt the Conference Committee report and the spreadsheet, but to start today, we're going to have staff do a brief walkthrough of the spreadsheet and the bill. So I will defer to Eric first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, Eric Olofsson, Senate Fiscal Analyst for the Housing Committee. Just to talk about two brief policy aspects within Article 1 before I dive into the spreadsheet. First of all, the Senate provision restricting administrative costs of the appropriations has fallen off from this Conference Committee report. And second, on page 8 of the Conference Committee report for the transfer of funds, now the Commissioner of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency must notify chairs and ranking minority members of the legislative committees having jurisdiction over housing finance and policy before shifting or transferring that money. So just wanted to point those two provisions out. So in your packets, members, you should have a spreadsheet that walks through basically Article 1, the appropriations article of the Conference Committee report before you. So in your packets, top left corner should say Housing Omnibus, Senate File 2298, Conference Committee Agreement. Top right corner, updated 5/16/2025, 10:42 a.m. So the first page of the spreadsheet just walks through all the riders, so I won't go through each and every rider, but Ms. Highmark and I will rather go through the change items. So the change items are on page 3 of the spreadsheet. And just to orient you, according to the Global Targets Agreement, the housing bill received a target of $15 million from the general fund for fiscal years 25 through 27, and additional $3.8 million in 28-29, and the Conference Committee report before you meets those budget targets. So beginning with the Housing Finance Agency for the development and redevelopment change items, on line 68 on page 3 of the spreadsheet from the general fund, it's additional $2 million one time from the general fund for the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program in FY26. Moving on down to line 71, it's for the Workforce Home Ownership Program. It's again $2 million in fiscal years 26 from the general fund. On line 72, for the Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grants Program, it's $2 million one time in FY26 from the general fund for a total of $6 million for the development and redevelopment aspects within the budget of additional spending. Then for FHPAP, or the Family Homelessness Prevention and Assistance Program, on line 75, it's $8.35 million of additional spending in FY26. And then in the tails, there's additional bump of $900,000 over 28-29, so a base increase. With that, I'll pass it over to Ms. Highmark.
Ms. Highmark.
Mr. Chair, members, continuing with the change items, we'll move to the total change items for homeownership assistance. Line 78 has a $2 million one-time appropriation to MMCDC for the Community-Based First-Generation Homebuyer Assistance Program. Line 79 has a $2 million appropriation to the Homeownership Assistance Fund for a total change items for homeownership assistance of $4 million in fiscal 26 and 27. On line 82, there is a cancellation of $2 million from the Single Family Housing Program for Naturally Occurring Affordable Housing out of the Community Stabilization Program. That is a $2 million cancellation in fiscal 25. Moving down the spreadsheet to line 97, there's a repeal of the transfer to the housing support account. This transfer is $450,000 starting in fiscal 25 and ongoing. So that would result in a savings of $450,000 in fiscal 25, $900,000 in fiscal 26 and 27, and $900,000 in fiscal 28 and 29. Line 98 is the debt service obligations for housing infrastructure bonds. This would have a fiscal impact of $1 million in fiscal 28, $2.8 million in fiscal 29, for a total of $3.8 million in fiscals 28 and 29. There is an additional cost for housing infrastructure bonds of $4 million starting in fiscal 30 and for the life of those housing bonds. So, and with that, Mr. Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Ms. Highmark. With that, we will move into member discussion. Senator Lucero, what do you want to do? Yes, we'll back that up and go to walkthrough of the policy revision. I apologize. And Justin will be starting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm going to start with Article 3, which is on page 12 of the Conference Committee report. Section 1 of Article 3 modifies a requirement that MHFA send annual letters to manufactured home park owners to include a requirement that the letter provide information about the tax credit for sales of manufactured home parks to cooperatives and about notice requirements for sales of manufactured home parks. Section 2 modifies a wage theft provision applying to the agency's allocation of low-income housing tax credits to also apply to other political subdivisions that allocate the credit. Section 3 on page 15 requires the Housing Finance Agency to promulgate information on its website about landlord-tenant rights. Section 4 and Section 5 of this Conference Committee report modify the State Rental Assistance Program. Section 4 would replace an eligibility recertification requirement with a requirement that income annual be recertified for the purposes of determining the amount of rental assistance. Section 5 on page 16 allows the agency to use a formula-based approach to determining the amount of wards under the program and also allows redistribution of unused or underutilized funds. Section 6 and 7 modify the challenge programs provision allowing for awards to schools to expand the list of entities that can receive those awards to include contract alternative schools, tribal contract schools, and nonprofit entities contracted by one of those schools. Section 8 on page 17 modifies the Housing Infrastructure Bond Program to allow adaptive reuse for supportive housing and for permanent housing affordable to households at or below 50% of area median income. Turning to page 19, Section 9 modifies a 2023 appropriation for the community-based first-generation home buyers down payment assistance program to allow the program administrator to use recaptured loans under the program for the purposes of awarding additional loans. Section 10 modifies another 2023 rider, this time for the Local Housing Trust Fund grant program, to shorten the grant contracts from 8 years to 5 years. Turning to Section 11 on page 21, this section modifies the community-based first-generation home buyers assistance program to replace a household income cap with a home buyer income cap applying only to the individual person applying for the program. It also raises the amount of assistance under the program and then modifies reporting requirements under the program. Section 12 on page 23 of the Conference Committee report modifies the high-rise sprinkler grant program to allow award of loans as well as grants and also to modify requirements relating to what buildings are eligible for the program. Section 13, also on page 13, requires the Commissioner of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency for programs where it's practical to do so to award additional points up to 5% of the total points in its scoring system for products that will be located in jurisdictions that make certain land use and zoning decisions. On page 24, section 14 would require the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to work together with members of the affordable housing industry to develop a preservation framework to preserve affordable housing and then to report on that framework to the legislature. Section 15 on page 25 would require the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to report to the housing committees next year on information about properties in its asset portfolio. And then section 16 on page 26 would require the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to submit a report to the legislature next year on accessible housing. And Mr. Chair, Ms. Painter is going to conclude the remainder of the walkthrough.
Ms. Painter.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Laura Painter. I'm the analyst for the Senate Housing Committee. I'll take us through Article 4, the Miscellaneous Housing Policy. Section 1 on page 26 of the Conference Committee report amends the housing trust funds to include housing redevelopment authorities and require that any income generated for the funds be used on a qualifying project. Similarly, sections 2 and 3 relate to income generated to be used for a qualifying project for the local affordable housing aid and statewide local housing aid programs to be then used on a qualifying project. Section 4 on page 28 is clarifying language regarding landlords' requirements to provide heat to tenants. Section 5 is clarifying language to a landlord's ability to share information related to a tenant who has been a victim of violence. Section 6 on page 29 is more clarifying changes on notices related to landlord violations. So is section 7. Sections 8 and 9 remove recording fees for racial covenants. And sections 10 and 11 on page 33 of the Conference Committee report are clarifying changes to the effective date of the application of some landlord-tenant provisions from 2023. Sections 12 and 13 on page 33 delay the effective date of the Minnesota Cooperative Housing Act by 1 year. Section 14 on page 34 relates to the application of a prevailing wage for construction work for low-income housing tax credit-funded projects. Section 15 requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to submit a report to the legislature with advice about resolving conflicts between public housing authorities and using state general obligation bonds.
Thank you, Ms. Painter. And now we'll go into member discussion. Senator Lucero, I have you first on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps a question for maybe staff. So on page 28, lines 21 through 24, as Ms. Painter just stated, it's clarification of language for requirement for heat. Can staff just remind which side did this language come in into the conference committee? Was this from the House or from the Senate, the original language?
This original language was brought in the conference committee. It was not on the House or the Senate side. This was clarifying language when we worked on the prior section in Article 4.
Okay, so then, Mr. Chair, the amendment that has been posted, that I'm not going to offer, I just have it out here for discussion. This is one of the areas that we have been discussing in the Housing Committee for a number of years now. I think it was originally last year or 2 years ago. And I continue my concern of it being having sufficient ambiguity to create obligations or friction between landlords and tenants. So the amendment that I have, to further clarify, there are, because this is one size fits all for all housing types, and in the universe of housing types, there's older houses, there's newer houses or units, and in the older units, there might be unfinished or unheated porches. Or maybe previously they were a covered porch, completely exterior. That's somewhere a couple decades in the past they enclosed in with no source of heat. There are units that have crawl spaces and or cellars where mechanicals or other spaces, or there might be unfinished spaces in certain units. So even with the language that's in here, the amendment that I would have liked to have seen in this is to clarify that there are spaces that that exist within a unit, but they're not necessarily supposed to be for continuous habitation. And that definition of habitation is where the ambiguity lies, I believe. So, again, just throwing this out there for awareness of some of the concern that I have among this language. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Lucero. Other members? Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Igo and members. On this exact section, and I apologize for not catching this when we were reviewing the report, Chair Igo and I had a conversation on this specific language about removing the term capable of maintaining. And so I wondering from a process standpoint, can I make a verbal amendment, or do we my verbal amendment would be to strike capable of maintaining at.
I will defer to our nonpartisan if we're able to do that. Yeah, I don't think we can.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, if you made any changes to the conference committee report at this point, we would send it back to the reviser to prepare a new conference committee report, and it would then be circulated for signatures.
Chair Howard.
Is there a way to, could we recess briefly and just chat about this?
Members, we'll go into a quick recess. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are in recess. I call this committee back to order, the Conference Committee on Senate File 2298. Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Igo, and thanks for a brief chat here. We are going to see if there's another bill. There's a corrections bill. There's also a few other bills that have potential overlapping jurisdiction to make a correction here. Just stating publicly, the state of our negotiation was to strike a few words here and have agreement with Chair Igo, Chair Port, to see if there's a way here to, and I think there is a way to address this in a way that doesn't involve sending our whole conference committee back.
Thank you, Chair Howard. So then next on our list, I have Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, can we get a further explanation of what you're seeking to accomplish with that change?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Lucero. And on this point, there was not a bill this year to make these changes, but it did come up in our negotiation to look at if there's a tweak to this language that was passed 2 years ago. The strike through of capable of maintaining, in our conversations, there's a concern that if we include language capable of maintaining, that wouldn't necessarily meet the mark of the intent of this legislation, which is to make sure that landlords are providing heat at a level of 68 degrees. There's a concern that if we just use the word capable, could be rare, but a dubious landlord may say, like, sure, we're capable of maintaining heat, but we aren't. I made the joke, like, I'm capable of making a three-point basketball shot, but, I don't think that's going to happen regularly, at least at this stage of things. So that's what we had discussed, and we had made some tweaks to this language and want to just maintain the honor of that, to honor what we had discussed and agreed to.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Howard. So then the language would read, equip or furnish heat at the minimum temperature. Would that potentially be interpreted? Because there's many units out there where the landlord is not providing the heat at all. The heat is paid for, natural gas or electric, is paid for by the tenant. And I want to ensure then, with the change that you're proposing, it would not require the landlord to be providing or paying for the heat bill, essentially, is what I'm trying to achieve.
Chair Howard.
I would just say largely that change is, directly just reverts back to our existing law on this. So we wouldn't be changing what the law is so much. And so the happy to have a conversation offline, especially next year in our policy year, about this provision overall. But basically, what we're suggesting in this amendment is to return that language close to what is existing law. That start of that sentence there.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, let's talk offline on this and again, expansive on this topic. Thank you.
Next on my list, I have Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You know, this has been an interesting year for the House. And I think that, speaking for House members, we have all learned the value of compromise, that we work very closely together. You have people like Representative Igo and myself from the Republican side working shoulder to shoulder with people from the DFL side. And I've learned this not just in this committee, but I've also seen it in my own committee that I chair and in other places, that we actively are seeking ways to fix problems that face Minnesotans, bringing sometimes disparate perspectives together to fix a problem. And I want to thank the chairs for Section 13 of the bill, which is really a very minuscule policy approach to looking at changing zoning and land use law. And the reason that I mentioned the whole lesson in compromise that we have is that we're all compromising, but nobody else is compromising. The people who we are trying to interact with from city groups and county groups and other places have effectively slow rolled it once again, that we are now at the end of another bill where we could make meaningful impact, and we've tried, and I would get updates from our colleagues here, and hey, we're going to get this, and then it's backwards. Oh, we might get this. Oh, well, no, now it's been negotiated out. And the time to act is very much in front of us. And you've heard me mention before that I have kids of home-buying age. Guess where they're not looking? They're not looking in Minnesota. And we have missed the opportunity again because we have been negotiated, slow rolled, and kept from doing something that Minnesota needs. For those of you that have kids that are heading towards the age where they're going to buy a house, I think you should level set with your significant other or your spouse that it's not going to be a 10-minute car ride to go visit the kids and the grandkids. And that's regrettable. We have had the opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, and it's slipping away because people don't know the value of what we've learned. You know, and just to also bring my friends from the Senate in, we might agree on 11 things, but on this we are passionate, and on this we have been slow-rolled and shut down once again. So I appreciate the chair's work on this, and I think that it's a very minuscule but good first step. But we have to get past this mentality of being held hostage by people who do nothing but stand in the corner and clutch their pearls and talk about how the world is going to end if this policy changes in housing. So once again, thank you, chairs. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to just start by saying a strong Senate priority in this bill was first-gen down payment assistance. It is one of our caucus priorities. It's been very, a really successful programs and is an incredibly important program in Minnesota, as we have just a shameful disparity between white homebuyers and homebuyers of color. And so continuing to invest in first-generation down payment assistance in this bill, even though we had a small target, felt really critical. So appreciate the work from both of the other chairs to include that. I will say of this bill in general, it's not enough, but it touches all of the areas across the continuum. It touches production. It touches stability. It touches down payment assistance to help folks get there. There are clarifying policy changes to ensure that the programs that we passed and that already exist are able to do so more effectively. This bill isn't going to, you know, rock the industry. It's not going to, you know, suddenly create a path to the end of our housing crisis, but it is just a step towards stability at what we have, which I think we all around this table know is not enough. But in this moment, in the budget realities that we're in the conversations that are being had around this Capitol, I think it is a bill that we can be proud of for the work that we were able to do together. I will say I think this is the most functional committee in the legislature, and we really do work very well together, and that is because housing touches every single one of our communities, right? This is a need in Chair Igo's community, the same as it is in my community, the same as it is in Chair Howard's community. All of our communities are facing a need for more affordable housing, for more housing in general. And I think that the fact that we all see it touch people in our communities in such a visible way means that we all come to the table looking for solutions. And I just really want to thank everyone on this conference committee, but also on our housing committees in general, both in the House and the Senate, that I think we do share a real priority for this work. And I think, you know, despite our small target this year, none of us are, you know, willing to let that be the future sort of, we're just going to go back to a little small housing target. We are committed to making this a real priority for this legislature moving forward. And none of us are going anywhere, and we are definitely not going to turn our volume down. So I appreciate all of that work. We need more homes. We need them to cost less money. We need them to be built easier and faster. And I think zoning, the pieces that Representative Nash brought up, is going to continue to be an important part of this conversation. You know, one of the things that we have heard over and over and over is that our municipalities need incentives to do this. They want incentives. So I appreciate that we were able to put into this bill some incentive language to make it easier to get state funding if you are doing these things. And so I hope that that is the incentive that we intend it to be. I hope we do start to see some of those changes, you know, on city's own. But I will also say this year, I believe our legislative coalition on this topic got closer, got stronger, is more committed than ever to working on this topic. We need meaningful, productive changes, and our relationships around that have strengthened. Our coalition around that has strengthened, and I look forward to continuing that conversation next year. And really just thank you, Chair Igo. Thank you, Chair Howard. I think we, you know, did what we could this year in a tough budget year, and we will be back next year fighting for more for our communities.
Thank you, Chair Port. Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Igo and members. I really, you know, have been repeating the message that health is wealth, and no matter how you cut it, all roads lead back to home as a starting place. And so, first of all, just want to thank this conference committee, our housing committee in general, the many advocates, and really Minnesotans who have been coming to the Capitol, who have been rallying our communities, whether you're a red district or you're a blue district or maybe you're a purple district. Everybody's really clear and eyes wide open that we need more homes, we need more affordable homes, and we can't wait any longer because Minnesotans can't wait. I'm really proud of this budget, although, you know, we fought for our target. We all, I think, can agree that we need a heck of a lot more. But this yes and budget that funds across our housing continuum, that pairs with other committees, you know, from shelter capital and transitional housing, permanent supportive to first-gen home ownership, workforce housing that we desperately need out in greater Minnesota, and for us representing from greater Minnesota, just thank you. We know that the needs are more challenging, it costs more, and the headwinds that are coming, and also for the HIBs investments. I told Commissioner Ho that I want to see you at a lot of groundbreakings and ribbon cuttings on when we unleash those units. Because we know that they're going to change lives and save lives. Some of the things I'm really proud that we did, the challenge funds, the FHPAP that we know are a crucial lifeline, that this isn't enough to match the need of Minnesotans. I also just, you know, think that for Minnesotans who are facing health challenges, disabilities, substance use, and mental health, that these investments and the policy changes represent just that little splattering of hope that Minnesotans need to be able to have a place to lay their head and then get everything else moving in a better direction. You know, with substance use and mental health, I tell people that the reason that we have that is because people won't have anywhere to put their pain. And for people with disabilities, and in this moment when people with disabilities are incredibly under attack in every direction, that getting more accessible housing online is the bare minimum, and that we need to do more. And so I'm proud of this bill that will strengthen our communities and our economy and hold more Minnesotans upright. In this bill, the heartburn, I have heartburn, but the things that, you know, I worked with many advocates and Minnesotans, and we've been building our tenant power across the state to not be able to fund the tenant hotline, that we know that Minnesotans are going to rely on at a time when we're seeing increased evictions, that they need that literal phone a friend. The HECAT dollars, you know, that's really important investments for the foreclosure prevention, to getting people into their first-gen home ownership opportunity, as Senator Port talked about. The investment represented a majority of communities of color who are able to get in a home that we have. We had 27,000 when we started. We got, what, about 2,000 into their first-time home ownership opportunities. And so we know there's a lot more work to do, but it just shows that this is a proven strategy. And the last thing I want to say is that, you know, this is represents a lights on bill, and we're not Motel 6 at the state of Minnesota. And some Minnesotans out there who, like me and you, have had a call on and stay in a Motel 6, couch surf, to shelter hop, waiting around for our voucher, waiting around for our opportunity to be able to have a house. It's not very Minnesota nice to be able to not have a house, to not afford a home, let alone in the communities that you want to live in and work in and invest in and build your life. At the same time, we have, you know, $100 million a year going with our mortgage credit to homeowners in Minnesota who already have 2 and 3 and 4 homes. And that's money that we could be using to put towards more investments in housing so that more people get a chance at home ownership, not just more people gobbling up more and more homes for themselves. So at a time when we have LIHEAP and SNAP and our tribal nations are facing historic disinvestment, I just want to say that to the folks out there who are the money, to who are the maintaining business as usual, we're not here for a game or for numbers of profit, that we are the many, many Minnesotans who believe in guaranteed housing, affordable housing, everywhere for all. And you'll continue to hear us out there, but we'll be coming to a city near you.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. Senator Bolden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to say thank you to the chairs for your work on this bill. Thank you to the staff who worked really hard on this bill. I am proud to support this bill. Especially thank you to all the Minnesotans who came this session and testified before our committees. We heard really powerful stories of people bringing their life experience and sharing with us about what they are going through and what they need from us, what they need us to do. And this bill represents some of that. There is certainly more work to do. There are other things I wish we could have gotten across the finish line. Certainly zoning and land use is one of those. Work around manufactured homes and tenants' rights. Work around corporate ownership of single-family homes in particular and what that's doing to our community. So we have lots more work to do, and I'm committed to that work, and I know we all are. But this is a good bill, and it represents a solid step forward and will certainly help people in our communities. I want to especially highlight the investments into FHPAP in a time where families are being squeezed, rising health care costs and child care costs, all the costs. Keeping people out of homelessness is not only the right thing to do, it's actually the fiscally responsible thing to do. So making the investments into that proven program will improve people's lives. And while this bill does not solve the housing crisis that people are experiencing in every corner of our state, it will make a difference in people's lives, and it will improve people's lives. And it is a step in the right direction. I'm proud to support it. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bolden. Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know we want to wrap this up, so just two quick questions. I don't know if this would be for any members or any staff. The provision in here on the prevailing wage, I think I had heard a brief explanation on that in a outside conversation, but I'm wondering if we can just get confirmation on the practical implications of what that's doing.
I'll defer to our nonpartisan who wants to walk us through that one.
Mr. Chair and members, I believe this section allows a variance for the low-income housing tax credit funded projects.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I had heard that there was, and this is why I'm seeking clarification, that there was some kind of a prevailing wage provision that was in terms of framing, but there was a commercial rate on commercial buildings that are not stick frame, and that's what this was dealing with. So I did not hear that in the answer, though, so it sounds like perhaps that's not what this provision is dealing with. So I'll move on to the second question. It looks like Ms. Painter is potentially looking that up to confirm. The other question, Mr. Chair, and this would be for any member or staff, or perhaps maybe even Chair Port. So in the Senate, we had a provision, I think, that was added to the judiciary bill that was going to deal with the Section 8, if that has changes in the federal level, and that's going to have fiscal implications in this jurisdiction. So I'm wondering, can you explain how or where that is or what that might result in?
Chair Port.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Lucero, thank you for the question. That provision has fallen out of the judiciary bill with the budget targets that were given. There's just not enough money for it. I think it raises, you know, the continued conversations we will have over the coming months as the federal budget gets passed, that we certainly may be back here, likely will be back here in the fall, because these bills that we're passing today, including this bill, do not contemplate massive cuts to programs that the federal government has consistently funded. Though I will say housing is a place where the federal government has not pulled its weight. Even the little bit that they give us would be devastating to lose. And so while we don't have sort of a safety net provision in this bill or in the judiciary bill, I remain committed to pushing for us to come back should large cuts in federal funding happen in Minnesota.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll close with this. I very much appreciate and agree with many of the remarks that were made as we were around the table here. Housing is so important, and one of the things, as Chair Port has expressed, that this makes it a very productive committee in this space is because we all agree on the seriousness and the importance of housing to all Minnesotans, regardless of the background or who they are. The deep regret that I have is this bill is not going to get us out of the mess that we're in. Housing is short in terms of supply, costs are too high, and we're in the midst here of another graduating class, whether it be those that are graduating high school or whether it be those that are graduating college, and they're going to be starting their lives, and they're going to be looking for places to live, and we're going to have yet another year where prices are going to continue to be out of reach for far too many. And I think it was Rep. Nash who mentioned that people are going to, they have a desire for home ownership, and they're just going to look other places. And it's a serious, serious issue as we look down the road here in Minnesota. And but I look forward to the continued, again, great efforts on both sides of the aisle, both bodies, as we continue these efforts and conversations. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and hopefully that bought enough time potentially for Ms. Painter if there is an answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Lucero. Ms. Painter, any follow-up?
Mr. Chair and members, I did get some more information about this. This is being it's a fix to the wood framing rate. It was drafted by the labor commissioner at the request of the building trades. Let's see. Is that answering your question, Senator Lucero?
Senator Lucero.
Mr. Chair, what I'll do, it does not, but what I'll do is I'll perhaps throw this out there, and then when it gets to the floor, maybe in a couple hours from now, we can get clarification. I'll ask a similar question there. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Senator Lucero. Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Igo. Few comments. First, I just want to start with thank yous. Thank you to our incredible House and Senate staff, both partisan and nonpartisan staff, who were working around the clock last night to get this bill prepared, and really just around, especially this time of year, just literally work around the clock. It's incredible work that they do, and I know I'm speaking for everybody that we're immensely grateful. And I'm also just incredibly grateful for the bipartisan partnership we have in the House and the Senate with fierce and committed chairs, committed to change. And I think that's important to say because it's sometimes hard to be committed to change in this legislative body. Change is some of the hardest things we do, especially when we're talking about kind of disrupting some of the inertia of how we do things here. And we have a bipartisan commitment that this issue is too important to sort of go along to get along. That gives me hope that we're together, the folks in this room, can move on this issue going forward. what's in this bill is very good. It will do good for Minnesotans all across the state. A few of the pieces I really want to call out is the investment in emergency rental assistance with family homelessness, aid and prevention. For families that receive these resources in all 87 counties, it is the difference between staying in their home and being homeless. It couldn't be more important funding. And the resources we have to build homes are the exact kinds of homes that, but for that public investment, wouldn't be built. Homes that are going to be affordable for our lowest income workers and families all across the state, both to rent and to own. And so hundreds of families will see their lives change for the better because of the investments in this bill. But I do have to spend the time and maybe even the balance of the time saying what's not in the bill and calling out that we do need to sit and be uncomfortable with the fact that in many ways we haven't met the moment. In some ways we've retreated. In 2023, we made a historic $1 billion investment in homes. And I think Chairport really mentioned this. You know, we really left that saying, like, this needs to be the new norm. We've done something new and different in saying that housing needs to be ratcheted up the list in an area that delivers long-term investments that actually meet the moment. And collectively, this legislature and executive branch haven't met that moment with this bill. And we just have to be clear about that. And a specific, I mentioned FHPAP. So the 2023 legislature, I just want to give an example. The 2023 legislature put more than $100 million into FHPAP for emergency rental assistance. 30,000 families benefited from those resources and were able to stay in their homes. With this investment, and we've made some more investment, but because those were one-time investments, it's a massive cliff. And 22,000 fewer families will have access to that emergency rental assistance than they did in 2023. Are the needs of families in Minnesota less than they were in 2023? And in many ways, they're greater. As it relates to homelessness, we have to be clear that I expect homelessness to go up in the state of Minnesota, maybe to historic levels. And we just have to say that. Sit with that uncomfortable fact and be more willing to be bolder in our work and our collective action to address those issues in the years to come. In terms of building homes, again, hundreds of Minnesotans will benefit from new homes, both to rent and to own. And for those Minnesotans, that will be life-changing. But it's quite literally a drop in the bucket compared to our 100,000 housing shortage. And if you bear with me, I have a prop analogy, which we can't do on the House floor, but we can do here. A lot of folks have seen this analogy for me over the years. For some, it might be new. But if our entire general fund state budget was this gallon jug of water right here, in the budget that we're about to adopt, we're spending less than a percent on housing. 0.27% of our general fund budget will go to housing. That is this right here. Barely made a splash on the table. 0.27%. When you see the scope of the challenge that Minnesotans are up against, we just have to confront that that is not enough. It's not good enough. But for public investment, we know that the kinds of houses, especially the homes that are affordable at the lowest income levels, will never be built. We need dependable long-term investments in housing, or we will never solve our housing shortage. But we also won't solve our housing shortage through public investment alone. I mentioned our 100,000 unit gap in housing. By conservative estimates, what it would cost if we were to use public dollars to build those homes, it would cost, and this is a conservative estimate, $35 billion with a B. And so we can't just imagine that there is a public investment alone strategy to address our housing shortage, we need to think differently. And the answer is our Yes to Homes agenda. We need to move our Yes to Homes agenda. I agree with the comments raised that our support and coalition are growing. Late in the session, we did have some productive conversations with some of the city groups that have been opposed to this work. That was just too little too late, frankly. The work that we need to do together must begin the moment we gavel out of session, and my hope is that we do that in a very public-facing way. I believe one of the paths to getting to our Yes to Homes agenda is making sure that more Minnesotans are part of that conversation, because Minnesotans across the state are clear on this. They're clear. In fact, we are lagging what the public is telling us, which is do something different. And this is important work, and I feel confident that the folks in this room can work together to move that agenda next year. We must. So as we vote on this bill today in conference and today on the floor, it's a very good bill, but it's not good enough. But what gives me hope is that I really truly believe that the strength, the power, the ingenuity of all the folks in this room and Minnesotans across the state will help us take a positive step forward to get to that Minnesota we all believe in, where everyone has access to a safe, affordable place called home. And I look forward to voting yes on this baby step forward this session.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Well, members, I'll just make a few comments. Everyone kind of said everything I was going to say, which is great. But thank you to my fellow chairs. Thank you to this conference committee. In both housing committees, and thank you especially to the staff. It's been said a lot, but we can't say it enough. Thank you for working so hard, so diligently to get us this product that we have in front of us today. Simply put, this bill in front of us accomplishes the three pillars that I've always looked at housing through, which is affordability, diversity, and stability. The bill in front of us today is going to work to provide more affordable options in housing by providing diverse options in housing, which is going to give stability to Minnesotans. And that is something that all of us around this table share in accomplishing and working on. But the work isn't done, and I think we all agree on that too. And that's why working forward into the future, we're going to find a way to get the things done that are going to matter, that are going to fix that 100,000 home housing gap, that are going to make Minnesota an affordable place to purchase a home. Because there's no reason we should be losing in the Midwest as being the most expensive place to buy a home. And I look at it as the obstacle is the way, and the obstacle right now is some of the antiquated policies that this state looks at and how we build and allow for housing. And it's time to bring that obstacle down. And I look forward to working on that in the interim and bringing that conversation back next year with my fellow chairs and members of these committees. So with that, thank you, members, and we'll move to adoption of the spreadsheet dated 5/16/2025 at 10:42 a.m. So I'll make that motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. We'll move to our next motion. I move that we adopt the conference committee report coded CCRSF 2298. All those signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. With that, members, that concludes our business, and the conference committee report and spreadsheet are adopted. We'll see you on the floor. Thank you, members. We are adjourned.